Beach easy.
That's the difference between someone who's a heavy user and an addict, man. That would affect someone who's casually using or has that moment like, oh my God, it didn't, the consequence, I knew the consequences and I knew that look, but I couldn't stop going and doing it.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. From personal growth and self-discovery to challenges and victories, we discuss it all. Join us as we dive into the extraordinary stories of ordinary people all the way to the end.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. I'm Julie Ellis, and today I'm joined by Chip White, who some of you may know as Wheel of Fortune co-host Vanna White's brother. Chip has led an interesting life full of ups and downs, and I'm excited to dive into his story. Vanna also joined us for a portion of the interview and offered a new perspective on some of Chip's childhood experiences.
So, Chip, tell me about growing up in Myrtle Beach. What was that like?
It was the 60s and 70s. It was probably the most amazing time to be here. It's funny, we were driving over here, we were looking at all the growth, and I said, man, you know, we lived here in a magical time.
Yeah.
It was just kind of starting to develop, but there was still a home feel, you know? I mean, in the summer, you had 200,000 people, and in the winter, you had 20,000. And now it's 200,000 and a million, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It was, you own the beach, so to speak, back then, because you were a local. Being local meant something, mm-hmm. because you were the ones who suffered in the winter. I mean, I remember as in the winter, it would be no one here. I mean, and
the streets were bare.
Yeah,
if you had cars on the street. Yeah, we would leave our doors unlocked. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Never locked the front door.
Oh,
left the keys in the car.
Time.
And our parents were, we worked. You know, our whole lives. I mean, I was babysitting when I was 12 years old, and I'm so glad that they put that work ethic into us at such a young age, because you work for what you get. Don't give your kids everything.
Yes.
They need to work for it. They need to understand what that means, you know? So I think that's something that both Chip and I were given at a young age, that I'm so happy that we were, that our parents were that way.
You can't do it today. I mean, I was bussing tables in a restaurant at 11.
Right.
You know, that was my job, my summer job. I would five nights a week bussing tables at Tony's Restaurant in North Myrtle Beach.
Yeah. Now, who's older? Are you a little bit older, Vanna?
I am a little bit older, yes.
A little bit?
3 years, to be exact.
Did y'all get along when you were siblings?
Yeah.
Yeah?
She got along better. She's always loving, and I was just the tormenting little...
Well, that's your role.
Brother, you
that's
know?
How that goes.
No, he was sweet. He was, and he still is.
What kind of kid were you? Student-wise?
Student-wise, I was not really... I could get by. I didn't study a lot, man, until like the last minute, but I'd do okay. My grades were okay. If I tried, I could do well. I just was lazy, wanted to have fun. It's all more about having fun. As you look back, you know, you're probably not a great kid. I remember, you know, taking money out of my mom's wallet and at a kid and getting caught, you know, thinking you're getting away with it.
Yeah.
I was definitely a scared kid, you know. I mean, wanted to be cool, but too scared. And
why were you scared?
I don't, you know, it's like imposter
self-esteem.
Syndrome of everything. Self-esteem, man. It's like truth is, I was probably a pretty damn good surfer, but I never felt as good as everybody else, you know?
Do you remember if you wanted to be anything in particular as a kid when you grew up?
I think probably wanting to be a professional surfer at one point, but again, too afraid to really to go to where you could go to the next level. It's funny because I had friends who they lived here in the summer, they surfed and they waiters, parked cars, and winter they would either go like to Boone or to Aspen and there'd be ski bums. And I so much wanted to do those, or they would go to Hawaii and surf or Puerto Rico. And I so much wanted to do that, but I was just so afraid to leave. I mean, what if I get there and I don't have any money? I don't have a job, you know, how all those things that adventure that I really wish I was wired to do or had been wired to do that I ended up missing out on.
Chip and Vanna's childhood was full of both joy and hard work. While only half-siblings connected by their mother, they were raised together and still enjoy a close relationship. Through trial and error, their personalities developed as they grew up. Vanna has quite the story of her own, but today we're focusing on Chip and how he overcame a major struggle in his life. Back when he was growing up, rules weren't quite so strict, creating an environment that seemed to be a breeding ground for trouble.
I got drunk my first time at 11.
Oh, wow.
I consider drunk. Here's the crazy thing about life and growing up in Myrtle Beach at that time. 11-year-old, I'm going to be 12 at the end of the summer. 11-year-old, I'm working at Tony's restaurant, bussing tables. The waitresses, a bunch of them lived at Blue Top Apartments on Hillside, which was this apartment building on Hillside in North Myrtle Beach. They're going to have a party. So they invite me and Eddie, a friend who's living with us, who's working at the busboy for the summer, to the party. 11. My mom drove us and dropped us off.
Oh, my gosh.
And came and picked us up. And we're playing beer drinking games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my first buzz.
Yeah.
Now, my son at 16 is working the restaurant. If he said the waitress was having a party, could he go? I go, out of your mind.
No.
No. You know. But that was just, my parents knew that we snuck into the back alley. They knew we snuck into the galleon.
When did you start partying then? When did you start using drugs?
Started doing blow at probably 18. Someone had given me some for my 18th birthday. I didn't do it that night and I held on to it, you know, for a special occasion, whatever, and did it later. And it wasn't like instantly I went out and started doing it every night. And, you know, and I didn't do it again probably for after that first time I did it. I probably didn't do it again for another 8-9 months, you know. It wasn't like instantly.
Well, it never is,
yeah, and
right?
Then there would be periods and then, I'd meet someone and be at a party, but it was not like, I definitely didn't start buying it until a little bit later in life. But then it would be like, oh, so-and-so would have some or so, you know, and it would just over the years. And there was a point then it's like, okay, well, if I sell it, I can have my own, you know, and I found connections to sell it. And
how did it make you feel?
At first, it was amazing. I loved to dance and it was great energy, made you feel special, you know, took all that anxiety or whatever that, you know, I'm not good enough, whatever, away from out of your head.
Right.
Just like, you know, when someone drinks in the beginning, it's all great in the beginning.
Exactly.
In the end, it was hell. I mean, look at me and people say, you're going to go to hell. I'm looking, I've already been there.
Yeah.
You know, in my life, it may not be your hell, but I've been through hell and that part doesn't faze me anymore.
When did it start to get out of control for you?
It definitely started getting out of control. I don't even know. Probably sooner than I think than it was,
right.
But definitely, yeah, you know.
Well, I guess my definition of that would be when it started negatively affecting your relationships, your livelihood.
Well, again, it did way before I realized it. Because when I think back about, that relationship ended or was bad because I was high as a kite, you know, but I didn't think of it at the time as it affecting things. And it, you know, wasn't probably long after really starting, probably by 20 or 21 years of age, I was running pretty hard with it. And then in LA, like I said, mentioned earlier, we had some neighbors that it was bad, you know.
Were they junkies or
yeah, I mean they were, you know, they
or
had money. They weren't dealers, they had some money, and they were every night we'd buy a bunch. And you know, we'd play cards and be up all night just doing line after line after line. And
yeah.
And then I found their dealer so I could get my own and different, and then it just
snowballs, huh?
Snowballs, and at the end I'm unemployable. I got a wife who is fed up and a 2.5-year-old who looks at me with pure hate in his eyes because he can't figure out what's wrong with dad. And It's not good.
And he was just little, so he didn't exactly even know. He wasn't even exactly processing that, except that he knew
something.
You disrupted, that you made his, he felt his mother being hurt by you.
Oh, it would be.
Right? How did you process that when you saw this little thing looking at you like that?
So I was unemployable, obviously, and Eve would be working. I would maybe be home with him alone, and I'm snorting coke in the back room, and you know, I'm trying to maintain, and just getting more wired, and yeah, set him on the sofa and turn on the TV, you know, to entertain him. And he'd just sit there and he'd look at me with just like pure, it's just 2.5 years with pure hate in his eyes. And I can still see it today. It's like,
oh, wow.
And all I could do was still turn on TV and go back in the back and do some more and come back, you know, it just.
Well, how did that register to you though? Were you just like,
Oh, it was breaking my heart, but I couldn't.
It did hurt you, but it not enough to make you stop.
Oh, that's the point. I mean, that's the difference between someone who's a heavy user and an addict, man. That would affect someone who's casually using or has that moment like, oh, my God. It didn't. The consequence, I knew the consequences, and I knew that look, but I couldn't stop going and doing it.
Did Vanna know you were using to that degree?
Yeah, one point I said to her, so 9 months before, not even 9 months, probably 2 years, 9 months, there was a point where I knew I had a problem, and I said to her and my wife, look, here's what's going on. I got a problem. And they're like, we'll send you to rehab. I'm like, no, I got this. I can do this. And so for 9 months, I stayed clean. Things were good. I mean, I was still drinking because it was just the cocaine that was my issue. Did good for 9 months and kind of things were going good. And as the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, on a sunny day out of the blue, I told my friend, I said, hey, let's get a gram. And it started a 2-year run that just, finally ended.
What happened that day?
Eve woke up. We were up at 5 a.m. and she looked at me and she said, I'm done. You were high as a kite last night. You've been lying. I'm done. I'm not going to let our son see this. She said, we'll sell the house. You can buy the biggest pile of cocaine you want and snort it till you die, but I'm not going to let our son watch it.
How did you feel at that moment?
Crushed, relief, baby, baby, please give me one more chance. Mm. And she's like, nope, done. Dad was visiting. She said, I'm going to go stay with some friends for a couple days because your dad's here. She left that day. My hair was kind of long. They'd been bugging me about getting a haircut. So I went and got a haircut, met Dad and them at Wheel of Fortune. And afterwards, I'm driving the road and I pulled off to the side and I said, I got a problem. And we went and chatted about it. And his alcoholism ran on his side of the family. His dad was an alcoholic. His brothers and sisters were alcoholics. He understood that part. He didn't understand the drug part. I mean, His response was, son, don't you know that's illegal?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dad.
That was just gonna wipe it away. Yeah.
Hitting rock bottom is never easy. But for Chip, it was the wake-up call he needed to get his life back on track. The people in his life understood that he needed help, but they also knew he had to be the one to reach out for the change to be lasting.
I told my dad, I told my wife, I said, it's stupid for you to move out with Crawford. You guys keep the house. I went and found a place, a small apartment, and I moved out. Started going to CA meetings and
AA
meetings.
Like right away, you found a meeting.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of days because dad was in town and we went to Vegas with Vanna and stuff.
And where were you then? And were you in LA at this time?
Yeah. I think I actually went and stayed with Vanna for a couple of days and then found my own place. Started going to meetings and just kind of keep going to meetings. I was still drinking some. I mean, for me, it was just, I had to stop doing the coke. That was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize, and which is stupid because in CA, the first step is all mind altering substances, but I just, I wanted to stop doing that. And, I asked this guy to sponsor me and I'm going to be honest with you, Sean, I'm going to have a drink with my glass of wine or with my steak and stuff. And he's like, dude, that's not the program. I'm not going to sponsor you. And like any good alcoholic, I went to the bar and had myself a couple of glasses of wine that night. next day, October 3rd, I woke up and I'm laying in my little apartment. I just kind of looked at the ceiling and went, you know what, God, I give up. I don't know what's going to happen if I do it their way. I do know what's going to happen if I do it mine. Mm. And so October 3rd is my sobriety date. You know, it just kind of, there was a, wasn't a bright light. It wasn't, but there was just a shift and
yeah, and
things changed. When it hit the fan and I started going to meetings, got kicked out of the house. For whatever reason, it worked, you know. And I started going to the meetings, and I had the uniqueness syndrome at the beginning, like, oh, your story's great, but I'm different than you, you know. And finally one day, man, it just, I was at a meeting at the church we belonged to, and it was a Saturday meeting. Eve and Crawford had been, Eve was in the band, so they had been in the church rehearsing. And they came out, and I watched them run to the car, and he's giggling, and they get in the car, and they drive off, and it's like, damn. I went my life. That night I was like, hey, I'm Chip White. I'm a cooking addict and I need help. And a guy, two people gave me this one guy's phone number, him and it was the same number. And he did a 12-step workshop where they would take you through the steps in a month. Called him up and he said, all right, be there on Sunday at blah, blah, blah. And I showed up and for some reason there was a group of us. And at the end it was just me, but I don't know, man, it just, I'm grateful. For whatever reason, the big man said, you're going to get it and you're going to work with people and there's going to be times you're not going to work with people. But whatever happens, if you keep at least a little contact with me, you're going to keep it. I don't know why some people get it. I don't know why some people don't. All I can do is, you want to talk about it? I'll talk about it. You want some help? I'll work with you through the steps.
Yeah.
I can't get you sober and I can't get you loaded. Those are both choices you have to make.
Exactly.
I can give you my experience on being loaded. I can give you my experience on being sober.
Yeah.
My son, he knows the story because we've had conversations. He's heard podcasts. He's heard me talk about it. He's seen me go to meetings for, 22 years. He doesn't really remember or know those things other than through conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But don't kid yourself, the kids aren't paying attention, because not long after I got back in the house, we're having dinner and Eve's having a glass of wine. And he looked at me and goes, why aren't you having wine, Dad? Because he was used to us. And I'm like, I just don't want any. Okay. That was all he needed to know.
Right.
I didn't need to get into the whole conversation. He's a 3-year-old,
Yeah.
Doesn't need the whole conversation. But he noticed.
Chip's sobriety allowed him to reclaim the most important thing in his life, his family. Chip's wife showed an incredible amount of strength during this time, and they remain married to this day. Chip's son, although young when all of this happened, also feels the profound impact of the choice his dad made to hold on to the people that matter the most.
How old is your son now?
25.
And are you close with him?
Yeah. He's a really good kid, young man. Like I said, he knows the deal, and I don't try to judge him on what he's doing. It's like, dude, it's your journey. And I've said before, you know your genes. You know my story. You know your mom's side of the family. You know this. So, and I always tried to, I knew alcoholism ran in my family, so I tried to keep an eye on my drinking. Drugs were a whole other story, but just having fun.
Nobody said anything about
it. Yeah, you guys weren't coke addicts.
So what happened with your wife after you began getting sober?
I moved out and she kept Croft. We kept some touch. I mean, she was definitely distance. And then, as I started staying sober, staying clean the times and she's like, all right, you can come home in the guest room. And I moved into the guest room for a while and was still, I mean, at one point, her friend said, do you even know he's going to those meetings? And she said that to me and my ego, well, what do you mean? Of course I'm going to. But then I had to step back and go, well, yeah, she has every right to ask that question because of my past.
Yeah.
Would prove different, As I kept my mouth shut and just let my actions speak, eventually she had a hard choice. Do I let him back in or do I just leave him and we figure out the kid thing together? And she made the choice of let's give him another shot. And 30 years later, we're still giving me another shot.
That's why I was just looking at my notes, because I was pretty sure you were still with her.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, she's, you know, we've had our ups and downs financially, you know, we've had them emotionally as any marriage, and we've had some amazing adventures, and we've had some oh shit moments and moved all over, and it's been, you know, it's been a hell of a life. I mean, I don't, you know, much as if I said and compare it to someone else's, I feel like I'm here. But if I step back and look at it from a different perspective, I go, hey, you know what? This guy's life's really up here.
Yeah. What's the secret to a long marriage? What do you think held it together for you for so long?
I don't know from her point of view. I think for mine is it's going to be like a heartbeat. It's up, it's down. It's up, it's down. And there are times where you guys are on the same wavelength, and there are times where you're up, she's down. Either way, you're going to cross. You know, there's moments where she'll look at me, or I'll look and go, you know, you rock my world. And there are other moments she'll look at me, I'll look at her and go, will you stop breathing so loud? You know.
Chip's marriage has proven to stand the test of time. Despite their ups and downs, he and his wife have faced challenges together and come out stronger because of it. Chip's career is another part of his life that faced struggles due to his drug problem. He works in the film industry and has managed to find success despite the roadblocks along the way.
It sounds like you've had an interesting career. When you were working, you were doing some cool things in show business.
So yeah.
Tell me about some of the things you did. And first of all, why did you get into show business? What drew you there?
I've always loved movies and stuff. And in my mind, I'm going to be an actor. But again, it goes back to that what if, too scared. In college, I did acting. That was probably the only class I passed at Coastal Carolina. But again, the fear of rejection, man, I did not do well with rejection.
And acting would be the worst thing you could do, right? Because that's a lot of rejection.
Yeah. And at one point, I wanted to do stand-up comedy because I was doing the wet t-shirts and the short shorts and the bikini contest at Cowboys. I was emceeing them. And when you get an audience that's on, there's no greater feeling in the world than being on the stage and everybody laughing at you. But I don't know what I wanted to do. I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And of course, Vanna gets out there and she goes, come out and be supportive and kind of work for her. And then I end up going to King World, but I'm still not really knowing what I want to do. I'm getting high and no clue. And I just kind of things start falling in the place by a friend. Hey, I need you to do this. I can't do that. Yes, you can. And I'm going to pay you. Okay. Did a couple little film stuff in LA, but not a lot. Did Behind the Music's VH1, which was awesome. I did Nickelodeon.
Still love those. Yeah. What did you do for VH1?
I did Saturday Night Fever, the movie, when they did Behind the Music on it. I did some on Rod Stewart. I did some on Everclear.
What was your job, though?
I was associate producer, kind of a researcher.
Yeah.
Lining up interviews and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
And then I did Nickelodeon. I was an associate producer. It sat kind of in the edit booth with the guys. We'd cut the show and a few things. Again, all these were, and this was towards the end of my using when I definitely got unemployable.
Yeah.
After I got sober, I ended up doing reality shows, Southern Steel, Firehouse USA, and American Chopper for a little bit. But by then, we'd kind of moved out of L.A.
Chip has moved around a lot throughout his adult years and recently landed in San Antonio, Texas. In San Antonio, he's been able to start an exciting new project that's been in the works for years. It's a podcast called Relatively Famous, which documents what it's like to be related to a celebrity.
So we started in October of 2023 and actually launched on July 8th of 2024. So right now we're 21 episodes in, probably 25 by the time this comes out, maybe.
Yeah. Well, what gave you the idea for that?
look, nothing's new, but in, in the early 90s, everybody was getting a talk show. I mean, every C-list celebrity, everybody was getting a talk show. Mm-hmm. And we said, let's just be blatant and have Vanna White's Brothers talk show. So we shot a pilot called Vanna White's Brothers talk show. Shot it in our backyard. We had a fire pit where we sat by the fire pit and chatted. I had an Elvis impersonated bartender that would serve you a cocktail. My wife's band was my house band. I have my own theme song. And I had President Bill Clinton's brother, Roger, as mm-hmm. a guest. And Crystal Bernard from Wings. I had her sister, Scarlett. So back then, it was just kind of siblings.
Yeah.
And we just shot this kind of fun pilot. Pitched it a little bit and didn't pitch it hard and super hard, but we kind of pitched it a little bit. And then we were going to re-pitch it again, and that's kind of when my substance abuse really kind of hit the fan, and the people were like, we're not touching you, dude.
Yeah.
Last thing we want to do is get a deal, and you're going off the deep end, you know?
Right.
So it just never came about. And over the years, I've been thinking about it, and I threw it up on YouTube for fun, just some little clips. And when we moved to San Antonio, I met this guy. We were talking film, and he builds podcast studios, and I told him about the pilot. I said, come on, I kind of want to do a podcast on it. And he looked at me and he said, I love it. I'm in. We shook hands. He said, you book the guest and do the interviews. I'll do everything else. And he already had a podcast studio set up in his comic book shop. So we do the podcast out of Nelco Comics in San Antonio.
Cool.
And we Skype in our guests who aren't in town.
Right.
And doing about 30 minutes, kind of a conversation. We try not to edit. Like, I get him to send photos, but we don't edit them into the podcast, even for the YouTube version. Yeah. We just put them on the website, and we use them in social media promotions and stuff. And we try to keep it at a 30-minute conversation.
Yeah.
You know, been plugging away.
Through his work on the podcast and various film projects, Chip continues to find fulfillment in his life. As he reflects on his experiences, he recognizes that all the struggles he's faced have shaped him and led him to where he is today.
So we're to the, you know, and then you die part. You know, you got another, the last quarter of your life, basically, or whatever.
I'm
I don't
lucky.
Know what your longevity is in your family or whatever. But do you feel like you've had the some kind of guidance throughout your life? Or some reason for it all, I guess.
I would probably, to work with other alcoholics and addicts, you know.
Yeah.
Again, I can't get them sober and I can't get them drunk, man. It's up to them. I can be there.
Yeah.
I love and have mentored younger filmmakers. I've taught classes, you know, and probably will end up doing some of that in the podcast in a couple of years once I get more experience.
Yeah.
I think sharing your experience is probably why we're here for everybody.
How do you want to be remembered? Like, do you, and even if it's something that you haven't done yet?
Yeah. Oh, man. I think that, I don't know. You know, it's funny. I used to, before Facebook became really big, I had a calendar, a date book, you know, piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I had people's birthdays handwritten in there. And I'd call them every year and sing them happy birthday. And for years and years and years, I did that, and people go, oh, man, I didn't get my phone call this year. And I thought you were, you know, but I just can't seem to get the energy to do it again. You know, mm-hmm. Facebook, now I'll just maybe text or, you know, but I don't know. I think it's kind of like Vanna said, just, you know what? He thought about me.
Yeah.
He thought about me randomly.
As he approaches the later stages of his life, Chip understands that connecting with the people around him is what matters most. He wants to be remembered not just for his accomplishments, but for how he made people feel and how he supported them along the way. If you've been inspired by this story or any others, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review.
We don't just get away at the beach, we get together. Because no matter what floats your boat, we're floating right along with you. With over 2,000 restaurants, live music all day and night, and endless attractions, Myrtle Beach was made for having fun and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 miles where you belong, the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.